Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Church, and a happy Father's Day to all the fathers in the room that decided to make it here today and spend your time with us this morning. I'm Nick Apps, and I am the chairman of the program committee here at Prairie. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter your age, your abilities, or your inabilities. Later in the service, we'll invite guests, visitors, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services, and they're presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, as we have today, or our minister, whom we will have here eventually, I'm sure. We're currently in the recruiting process. Today, Howard Bellman will be presenting his program, Collective Bargaining for Government Workers in Wisconsin, The Challenge of Democracy in the Workplace. And I'd just like to remind everybody that we don't want to have anybody standing on their chairs or on the soapbox today. We're here to be informed and educated by Mr. Bellman, and hopefully we can keep the political conversation down a little bit. Although I know that's never a problem. Well, at this time, I'd like to introduce our speaker. Over the years since 1965, Mr. Howard Bellman has mediated in nearly every category of dispute. His work has ranged from the most ordinary civil and labor matters to international diplomacy. A significant portion of his practice has included high-profile, multi-party cases of public concern, such as controversial land use determinations, large-scale environmental remediations, school district desegregation, statewide education financing litigation, and Indian land claims. He's been appointed as a master or other court adjunct by federal and state courts, including the Supreme Court of Ohio. He received the 2003 Lifetime Achievement Award of the American College of Civil Trial Mediators. Mr. Bellman received his BA in law degrees from the University of Cincinnati and an LLM in labor law in 1963 from New York University. He's a distinguished adjunct professor at Marquette University's Center for Dispute Resolution Education, and has lectured at many universities worldwide, and we're very happy to have him lecturing for us today. Mr. Bellman was a member of the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission by appointment of Governor Patrick Lucey in 1973 to 1976, and the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Industry, Labor, and Human Relations in the cabinet of Governor Anthony Earle from 1982 to 1986. And as we all know, this is a topic that is close to many of our hearts. So we warmly welcome Howard Bellman.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Nick. I'm more than honored by the invitation, and it's so nice to meet all of you. I can assure you that I've worked in a broad variety of venues, but this is a first. And so that's very enjoyable for me and very flattering. I'm also sensing the sincerity of your invitation here, and I appreciate that a lot. Sometimes I work among people who are not as sincere as all of that, and I understand that as well, but I appreciate the difference. When I was still a student, and now you know how long ago that was, sometime during the Punic Wars. when I was still a student, I came to believe that since most American adults work about 8 hours a day and sleep about the same amount, the nature and quality of their work lives pretty much characterizes the nature and quality of their lives. And to the extent that they are going to have democracy in their lives, that is to say that they are going to have some opportunity to be influential about the quality of their lives, then they're going to have democracy in their work lives. That seemed to me to be a valid proposition. And I also came to learn very early on that if in fact one is to have, most of us are to have democracy in our work lives, we are going to have to be organized. You need to be unionized. Unless you are a shortstop or an eminent surgeon or an extraordinary artist, we do not, as individuals, have much power in the labor market. And if we are to have that sort of influence, it will be because we are working in concert with those with whom we work. So at that point, I was drawn to labor laws, an opportunity to earn a living and to earn a living idealistically. But I learned not long after, no surprise to anyone, I suppose, now, that in reality, there are bullies and victims and are sites of bad types all around the bargaining table on both sides of the management labor equation. And that, at least for me, the most comfortable position in that landscape was that of a mediator, an arbitrator. So that's what brought me in 1965 from Detroit, where all of my work was in the private, with private sector employers and unions, the unions of the private sector employers, to Wisconsin, where there was a job opening for a lawyer slash mediator slash arbitrator in state government, and where collective bargaining for public employees, teachers and cops and firefighters and public works employees, was being pioneered. I think you should know that some Wisconsin public employees have been organized and influential in affecting the policies and practices of their employers for decades. But in 1959, while Gaylord Nelson was governor, and a newly energized Democratic Party was starting to realize its potential, a statute like no other statute in the United States, a statute of no more than two or three sentences, was enacted, providing that such public employees not only were allowed to organize and make demands of their employer, but had the right to do so, to organize and demand bargaining over wages, hours, and working conditions. I'm guessing, because I wasn't here in 1959, that this was a response by a grateful governor and his party to the protests of public sector workers that saw themselves and portrayed themselves as compared to their private sector counterparts as second-class citizens, deprived of the democracy in the workplace guaranteed in the private sector by federal labor laws that had been in place since the middle 1930s. Still, that unprecedented enactment in Wisconsin hardly compared to the federal law. It was in a sense a token, a gesture by comparison. It was essentially a brief sort of quotation from the federal law of two or three sentences. And it's very important to understand why that was the case, why the whole federal law was not simply replicated by Gaylord, Governor Nelson, and by the Democratic legislature at that point. And this is the bit of information that I think is most important for me to try to impart here. Private sector labor law, the law that public sector employees claimed would give them full citizenship, private sector labor law requires employers to bargain in good faith, but says very little about how difficult negotiations will be resolved. Private sector labor law assumes and supports the economic combat that we know as strikes and lockouts as the ultimate arbiter of negotiation outcomes. I would compare it to the rules for boxing, the Marquess of Queensberry rules. It organizes the contest and then allows the beating. Of course, private sector labor and management usually settle rather than destabilize their ongoing relationship or test their powers and risk the continuity of earnings and productions, but that's what the labor law that has been in effect here since in the United States since the 30s contemplates. But in 1959, when Governor Nelson and the legislature were enacting the public sector law, the very first in the country, and ever after that, Even as the public sector labor law has grown to be even more comprehensive and elaborate than the private sector model, there has been an abiding anxiety among our political leaders of both parties that there is a real possibility of excessive union power. A fear that even the threat of strikes, when combined with union political activism, would overwhelm our governmental processes. That unions would, quote unquote, elect the government management, and then threaten it to support their demands. So it has always been the case in Wisconsin that strikes by government workers are prohibited. And the private sector model has never been replicated here. As a consequence of this partial adoption of the private sector model, I think the public sector labor law in Wisconsin from 1959 to 2011 has been in a state of unresolved controversy and flux. Quite the opposite of its private sector model, because the private sector model, absent the right to strike, if you take the right to strike out of the private sector model, it's an unworkable concept. It lacks a vital organ. It has no engine. Pick your metaphor. And has been in constant need of revision. It may be the case that no session of the Wisconsin legislature since the enactment of this law has not revised the law. That's how dynamic and controversial and unstable that law has always been. And it's important to know that some years ago, when our public sector unions would strike, despite the prohibition, they came to understand that, in fact, such raw power could cause them to lose. The unions themselves became the advocates of arbitration as an impasse resolution procedure that would substitute for the strike in the law. Some of you may remember the Milwaukee firefighters strike. Some of you may remember the Hortonville teacher strike. That was followed by the advocacy, not for the right to strike, but for interest arbitration by the public sector unions. But as it turns out, that revision of the model, of the private sector model, did not limit the controversy. Arbitration, among other things, turns over one of the most important decisions of elected policymakers, the labor costs that are being included in their budgets, to an outside, unelected person. That seems to many to be a distortion of the general democratic processes in our communities. So the story here is of a multi-generation effort to implement an ideal, democracy in the government workplace, that has been fraught with controversy. Controversy present even in its earliest formulations, as policymakers have attempted to reconcile this ideal with their anxieties over the possibility of union domination of government. And to do so, starting with a private sector model that's not really apt. So I would add a very important exacerbating factor. In the early years of this experimentation, these developments were guided by a particularly civil and constructive political dialogue, mainly among the representatives of the unions and public management, not among elected officials. They seemed to understand the needs of the relationships that they served and the inevitability of the turning of the political worm. In recent years, however, we have veered into a much different style that I would describe as kicking the pendulum. As they have moved, both parties, into and out of power in the Capitol, the raw exercise of power rather than constructive dialogue has been the modus operandi. Now, one party that seems to view itself as overwhelmingly powerful, and without any reference to those who have usually suggested policy to conservative elected policymakers, has kicked the pendulum so hard as to essentially go even beyond the place where my story began. It's as if the pendulum has swung beyond the 12. Remember, even before the pioneering law of 1979, there was some voluntary collective bargaining with government employees in Wisconsin. I've seen full-blown collective bargaining agreements from places like Manitowoc County that were entered in the late 1930s because snowplow drivers in Manitowoc County understood they had some bargaining power. and they knew when to exercise it. Still, it would appear that in the very near future, I mean, I had no idea when I accepted this invitation where that future was exactly, but in the very near future, meaningful collective bargaining will be prohibited. There was a time when it was not statutorily supported, but it was allowed. Now we're going to a time when it is literally prohibited. And that's what I mean about the pendulum swinging over the 12. I would not have predicted this. It seems to me like a sneak attack. But more interesting to me has been the response of union members and their supporters. The response seems consistent with the profound proposition that essential democracy is at risk. It is easily and often observed that unionism in the United States is at a very low point in our history. The contemporary economy seems incompatible with union growth. Union leaders have done little to teach their members why unions are needed. Employers have learned to avoid the abuses of their predecessors. Protective laws seem to supplant the protections otherwise provided by collective bargaining agreements. I would have characterized union members in 2011 as somewhere in the range of apathetic to cynical in their attitudes toward their bargaining agents. And I would have been wrong. They seem to recognize the signif-